Good morning, delegates. We will begin now and finish the discussion that we sought to end last night, and in fact we came to an understanding with our legal counsel. And if you will just give me one moment, she was doing further research last night, and I want to make sure that the agreement we reached stands. So just one moment, please. Thank you. Thank you, delegates. I want you first to understand that our legal counsel, Ms. Gonziera, Egla Gonziera, her goal, she is excellent legal counsel. Her goal is to make sure that we do things within procedure and to facilitate our work. She really has no intention of standing in the way of our working or of us working as flexibly as we want to work. So what we have decided, and she supports this is completely within bounds, requires for legal niceties that the group we establish, as I call it, is the group that dare not speak its name. So we won't have a working group or a subcommittee. We will just work. And the language that we put before you, with some very, very minor changes, would be the language that goes in our report, and it allows us to do exactly what we said we wanted to do yesterday, with a group of this executive committee, open to all members of the executive committee, work under the leadership of the member for North America, revised the plan that we discussed at this meeting and presented at the next meeting. So that the statement with some small revisions would be based on the draft strategic plan discussed at CC Exec June 2011 and based on all comments made during this discussion, the executive committee will develop a revised draft strategic plan. The member for North America will collect and compile comments from the executive committee members. The revised draft strategic plan will be presented at the next CC exec meeting for further revision. Our intention, of course, is that this next meeting should be before the next commission meeting, because we do need to move this work along to stay on track so that it can be fully reviewed by all commission members, comments received, revised, and be ready when it needs to be. I will turn the chair back over to Vice Chair Ostergaard to continue the discussion, if any, but I think we have a good solution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the situation has already been explained as clear as possible, so all we need is to see whether any delegates has comments. And if that is not the case, I think this is what we do. This is the decision of the committee. And then I also want to apologize for the confusion we made last night. There was some unclarity about the legal specificities that we were not aware of when we launched the proposal, which just came up during our discussion. I ask for forgiveness. I hope it didn't disturb you too much. And with these comments, I see no flags. Then I think we can conclude the issue and say this is what being taken to the report, and we look forward to efficient work by this group that doesn't have a name. And that means I have finished we have finished point four of the agenda, and it also means that I will leave this chair because we are moving to point five on the agenda, which will be chaired by Vice Chair Manindo. So thank you for bearing over with me during the whole day yesterday. I hope it was okay. Thank you.
Vice Chair Maniendo will lead this discussion, which will be led off by, introduced by Tom Hyland. And this is the discussion of the relations between the Commission and other international organizations, those seeking application for observer status. We do not record this section of our discussions, so the recording shall be turned off.
We now move on to agenda item number 6. And we have two items, 6A, the FAO WHO Project and Trust Fund for Enhanced Participation in Codex, and also under 6B, matters arising from FAO and WHO, consideration of requests for scientific advice. And I'll be calling upon WHO to lead the presentation under agenda item 6A. We have documentation related to agenda item 6A. We have the annual report 2010 of the Codex Trust Fund, and on part B we have the progress report January to June 2011. Okay, so we have the annual report 2010 of the Codex Trust Fund, part A, and part B is on the progress report January to June 2011. This report is for noting and information to this committee. We have another document under that item of the trust fund, the FAO WHO management response to the Codex Trust Fund midterm review. Again, this is for information and not discussion. The third document that we have is the Codex Trust Fund proposals to respond for midterm review recommendations. And we shall take time to look at that third document and make inputs from this committee. I hope we are ready, WHO. Lead this discussion. WHO, please.
Good morning, distinguished delegates of the CC Exec. What I would propose to do, with your permission, Chair, is if we could perhaps at this stage concentrate some of our attention and time on the proposals that we are putting forward for your feedback and input in response to the midterm review. And certainly, Chair, I'm prepared to make a short presentation that gives some of the highlights of those proposals. If you like, we can then stop for questions of clarification, and of course those can be on any of the documents that have been tabled. And then I would be prepared, Chair, to put up what I might call some key questions on which we might like to invite the input of the committee. So if that is agreeable to the chair and to the members of the committee, we could proceed in that way. So my short presentation relates to CCX CAC 11/34/14 add 2, which is the third of the documents that that appear under this agenda item for the Codex Trust Fund. And without going into too much detail, I'd just like to give some overall highlights so that we all kind of feel that we're on the same page in discussing these proposals. Now, I'd like to stress from the beginning that, as you are all aware, there was a whole process with the midterm review. We considered it in CC Exec last year. It was then taken to the Codex Alimentarius Commission. And there were those five sort of strategic questions that were being considered. And then it was the opinion of the CAC that those should also be sent to the regional coordinating committees. So the process since then has been, first of all, what was said in all those committees and really taking that on board. So it was very much listening, reading, trying really to pull out the substance of what was being said by the different committees. We then tried to take those comments into consideration and then say, well, what is the situation we're facing, and particularly with the physical participation in Codex? A lot of what we were hearing was around, you may need to think about bringing countries who need it most back in. So we sat down and we said, well, what is the profile of the countries who don't seem to be, who seem to be having difficulty, first of all, meeting their 50% matched funding requirement? So that might be a little alarm bell that we should be paying attention to. And also the graduate countries who don't appear to be maintaining a sufficient participation in Codex. We can't say, okay, the year after you graduate, if you got support from the Codex Trust Fund for 5 or 6 participations the year before, you might not necessarily be able to sustain that level of participation. But there's a gap between that and somebody just falling off the edge and we're not seeing them at all. So this is what we tried to hone in on. And we worked with FAO, FAO stats. We tried to build a picture. Well, what is the profile? What are some of the common denominators that we're facing here? Roberto, if you could put up the next slide. So considering what was said, doing the profiling of the countries, and then the third ingredient is, what are the principles of the Codex Trust Fund that we want to make sure are being respected? And the three really fundamental principles for us is, number one, the Codex Trust Fund is meant to be a catalyst for participation in Codex. Number two is that one of our strengths has always been the objectivity and transparency of the criteria that we're using, and we should try and stick to that. And then the third principle is the progressive independence, the progressive financial independence. So bringing countries to a place where they can sustain their participation in Codex using their own national resources. So just back to the profiling, just to paint a picture for you. We found that the countries that were having difficulty meeting their matched funding requirement and were falling off the edge after they graduated seem to share several of the following characteristics: small population, small economy, low gross national income, a heavy dependence on food exports, which might be a trigger our thinking about how important Codex would be for them, and or a high dependence on food imports, which is another one. I mean, it can be a combination of the two. Sometimes it can be one or the other. We also found that for many of them, there's a remoteness from markets. And then they all shared either the low or the medium human development status. So that was the picture that was being painted. Next slide, please, Roberto. So in looking at what options we might put on the table to meet Objective 1 and have a sort of strategic repositioning of the Codex Trust Fund for the next 5 years, we got to sort of two places. We went through a lot of thinking on this, but we got to two places. And this is in a sort of search for simplicity as well, because we have to remember Codex Trust Fund Secretariat is two people. A lot of the donors have always said to us, keep your administration costs down. So we're saying, well, what can we do maintaining the same level of personnel and administration? And the two options that I've put in the paper are, number one, the first option is basically no change to the criteria used, and there would just be follow-up by the Codex Trust Fund with those who are not meeting their 50% to try and find out, well, what the reasons are of this. And then we would rely on the parent bodies to do the actions, possibly in countries, as part of their technical cooperation programs or other. Option two actually took the profiling that we did and said, well, who are these countries? And what became very clear is that the vast majority of them are the least developed countries or the small island developing states. Sometimes those overlap, sometimes they don't. But it was clear that we had a big majority of these countries who were ringing the alarm bells. And what we're suggesting under option two is that we give those countries 2 extra years on the matched funding at 50%, but with an additional twist. The country identifies what its top two priority Codex meetings are. They always do that on the application, because your first choice on our application form is your top priority, and then it goes down from there. So now we're saying just two. What are your two most important Codex committees? And we are suggesting that we can support a participant to those two committee meetings, and then the country matches it either by supporting an additional two participants to the same committee meetings or two participants to two other priority meetings for the country, or it could be a combination of both. So it's keeping them in longer on 50%. Next slide, we can see this on the matched funding. If you look, so I've put in a new line. We've added a new layer. I've put in a new line for the least developed and small island developing states. And instead of getting 2 years at 50%, if you look other group 1B, there's 2 years at 50% in year 6 and 7. Now we have 2 further years in 8 and 9 for those countries. But we're still keeping them on matched funding, but we're limiting it to their 2 top priority committees, rather than giving them the whole gamut. The other thing that we thought would be important that the country shows is that they're actually taking the actions to secure funding from their national budgets. So we thought we could add something in the application form on that for all countries on 50%, because we've seen that this is something that's catching people a little bit by surprise, and then they're coming up to me and saying, well, I didn't know that I was graduating this year. So now we're putting in a mechanism that we hope is going to be encouraging that to happen and keeping an eye on it. Next slide, please, Roberto. The other option that we're putting on the table is the one that would deal with countries who have already graduated from the Codex Trust Fund, who wouldn't be brought in under the LDCs and SIDS option. Because there are other countries who are not sustaining their participation in Codex, but who don't fall under that category of LDCs and SIDS. We had a strategic planning meeting in March. It was the consultative group for the Trust Fund, FAO, WHO, Codex Secretariat. And we tried to look at the parameters around the graduate countries. And we came to a 6-step process. The first part of it is identifying the countries in need. And that's relatively easy to do, because if you look at the progress report, the annual report 2010 and the progress report, we published tables of how graduate countries are sustaining or not sustaining their their participation in Codex, and I'll take you to the page after. So it's very easy to see who are the countries who are not sustaining. Second thing is dialogue to determine the reasons for non-sustainability, because this might be a choice on the part of the country. We have to find out what's going on first and foremost. If a country says to us, we can't continue our participation, we don't have the money, we've got a drought situation, we've had a change in regime, there's a lot of reasons, and I've heard a lot of them. We have to take these into account. And in those cases, invite the country to make an application as a graduate country. However, it's a separate application process. In this separate application process, there will be a number of very stringent criteria. And these are just some ideas, because once again, please, we're at a strategic thinking level now. Details can be worked out, but I'm sure you'll have some very good suggestions for me. So some of the stringent criteria would be evidence of an effectively functioning CCP and NCC. You can see these on page 3 of the document under consideration. Continuous participation in meetings. Many, many people are constantly reminding me the effective participation is when somebody is continuously participating. I think we all know this now. That there's evidence of some benefit gained from the participation at country level. That individual is sitting in a seat but representing a country. So even if we are investing in an individual in participation in a Codex meeting, they're representing a whole country. So what is the benefit from that participation for the country? And how can we look at that? And then, of course, evidence of action taken to secure national funding would have to be on there as well. Now, we'd be moving into a different area, because now the applications are looked at by the Codex Trust Fund Secretariat. We measure them against a number of criteria. Tick this box. There's been intersectoral cooperation. It's been signed off by everybody. In this case, we're looking into something that is more technical. And that's where our parent bodies, and we had this discussion, and the parent body said, well, we understand that we'll have to be there for you. And the applications would need to be reviewed by the parent bodies with the people in those parent bodies at either regional or country level who actually understand the situation, can make the assessment of the application in terms of what they know is going on at country level. Then we also felt that there would need to be a separate reporting process, because what we're looking for in terms of these graduate countries is slightly different than what we have on the reporting for the participants that we currently use in the Codex Trust Fund. So once again, it would be much more tailored towards that building up of Codex at country, that building up of effective participation. And we thought for this it would be useful for countries also to submit, a national action plan that they would submit with the application, which could be reviewed year on year. In terms of what the countries are asking for, we also thought, instead of us saying blanket, all graduate countries will get this much support, we thought it would be good if the countries told us, how many additional years of support do you need? How many participants per year? And then tell us also how many participants would be supported by the government. So now it's much more putting the country in the driver's seat. You tell us what the additional support is that you need from the Codex Trust Fund. Let's have a dialogue around that. How many years is it going to take you? How many participants would be the optimal number? So those are just the steps around the option that we're putting on the table for the treatment of countries who have already graduated. And just to give you some ideas, at the moment I can't say how many graduates above and beyond the SIDS and the LDCs it would bring back in, because that's part of dialogue, to get in touch with them to see who is interested in coming back in. Under the LDCs and SIDS option, there would be 21 who are currently graduated who would be brought back in for those two additional years. That's 21 current grads out of a total of 56 grads. So it's actually a fairly high number. Among the countries who are currently on 50% matched funding, 10 of the countries who are currently on 50% out of a total of 43 would be kept on for the two additional years. Just to give you an idea of the numbers that we're looking at under that one. Next slide, please, Roberto. If we move to Objective 2, and thank you, Chair, and I will be able to move more quickly because Objective 2 and Objective 3 are quite short ones. Objective 2 is the one that deals with effective participation. Objective 1, widening the participation, what I call people on seats in Codex meetings, the physical participation. This is more the capacity building side of it. And what the CGTF, the Consultative Group for the Trust Fund and the Secretariat would like to present are three possible areas that we would look at. One would be to concentrate some training around a particular Codex committee, which seems to be a priority committee for a lot of developing countries and countries with economies in transition. So we're working much more directly to build effective participation in one or more Codex committee. And the idea would be to bring countries who have prioritized that committee in for a training course, say, 6 months in advance. We'd have to have some guarantees that it would be the same person who would also be participating in the Codex committee meeting itself. Otherwise, your investment dollars are being lost. But it would be a way of working with individuals. They go back to their country. They do the preparation for the participation in the committee. They come to the committee. They participate in the way that they've now been strengthened, built up, trained to do. And then they go back and do the knowledge management back in their country until the next Codex committee. The second idea is to use the mentoring and twinning. We've got some fast-moving countries. We've got some graduate countries. How can we use them in mentoring? How can we use them in our training course? How can we maybe twin some CCPs in different countries together? This is another thing we'd like to explore. And then finally, what we've been doing all along is to continue the regional and sub-regional Codex trainings, FAO-WHO organized trainings, supported then by the Codex Trust Fund to respond to particular needs for groups of countries. Next slide, please. On Objective 3, we already have two areas of work that are underway. One of the seminars that we've been carrying out at Codex Committee on Contaminants in Food, Residues of Veterinary Drugs, which is aimed at increasing people's understanding of how the science gets into Codex and how they can contribute to that. It's fairly easy. It seems to be reaping some good rewards, and it hardly costs us anything because they're there, so we just do a seminar. So we'd like to continue that one. The other thing is most of you know that in this calendar year we got some money from the European Commission for four countries in the Codex Africa and Near East region. One country in Near East, Sudan, three countries in Africa, it's Ethiopia, Burkina Faso, and Mali, to carry out data surveys on mycotoxins in sorghum. So that's going to be our big ticket item for the increasing the scientific and technical input, getting the data from developing countries, which has been lacking. Feed it through the expert committees, the discussion paper that's going on in the Codex Committee on Contaminants in Foods, and then see whether the data would justify the possible development of a standard for mycotoxins in sorghum. One proposal that's being considered for piloting is possibly bringing qualified experts in from the developing countries to be mentored into the expert committees, so they'd work with somebody. The details are in the paper that you have before you. Next slide, please. So I'm finished the small presentation, Chair. If you'd like to stop here, and then I'm ready to move on for the key questions when you're ready.
Thank you very much, WHO, for that presentation. Are there any quick comments on the presentation? If none, then we'll ask WHO to move directly to the questions where they would like some ideas from this committee. WHO, please.
Thank you, Chair. I think we can still see this all right. It's probably fine. So for the key questions in terms of Objective 1, so Objective 1, our proposals are Option 1, which is status quo, no change. Option 2, which will bring least developed countries and small island developing states back in for 2 additional years of support at 50%, plus the option for the treatment of graduate countries with a new application process. So perhaps some of the key questions that we could be discussing here are, number 1, should LDCs and SIDS get extra support? Number 2, are the options that we put on the table the way forward? Or is there something else we should consider? Are there elements of what we put on the table that need to be added, taken away? Your suggestions there. Third question, should the graduate countries who cannot sustain some participation be brought back in? And is our proposal on the treatment of those graduate countries the right way to go? And once again, there are a lot of details that still need to be worked out. And you may have some suggestions which we welcome. But I think at the moment what we need to do is just sort of keep it at the level of, are we doing the right thing? Is this how we want to move forward? Is the way it's outlined, is the framework of it one that we're comfortable with?
The floor is open for proposals, comments. I want to remind delegates that we should limit our discussion to the questions. I want to also remind the delegates that there will be a side event during the commission meeting under which more detailed discussion could probably be held. So I want to limit our time specifically to the questions and other areas of proposals that will move this Codex Trust Fund forward. I recognize the flag of member for North America.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, WHO, for that very good presentation and a thorough report with some very good ideas, I think, that give us some food for thought as we move forward. We're certainly, as we've looked at participation and talked to a number of countries, very, very aware of some of the problems that have arisen for countries that have graduated or are in the small island developing nations, some of which are close to the United States and have come out of the program because of the fact that the people, they have a lot of tourist industry, and as a result that drives up part of the criteria and doesn't necessarily mean that the country is not as or is as developed. However, I guess the general reaction would be that we think that it's good to look at different ways of keeping participation up and maintaining participation. At the same time, and this will kind of come out of the meeting next Friday, I think, is the importance of looking at how we're going to sustain that. And that would seem to come from training or capacity building, or I think the mentoring idea is a good one too, where we're in addition to assisting countries to participate in the meeting, we're assisting countries to participate meaningfully and also to prepare themselves to the point where they will be able to do that on their own. I think what we find is that countries that it's one of the keys to getting support from your country is demonstrating to your country the importance of what you're doing. And if you're going to do that, you're going to have to be effective in Codex meetings. And so I think it's important that we help everyone become as effective as possible, figuring that that is one way that will help them get support from their governments. We all know the problem of making Codex visible within our countries. I think it's the same problem in most every country. And so we see that as an important thing to be focusing on as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that input. Member for Africa, please.
Merci, Monsieur.
Thank you, Chairman. I would like to congratulate the representative of the Trust Fund for the excellent presentation. I have to say it is difficult to make a choice between the two options that have been proposed, because I feel that they are complementary. Of course, I imagine everybody will agree with the importance of the Trust Fund and the need to continue it. In my opinion, there are various countries who have not made progress, and as such, it is important to look at what has gone wrong, what can be done. At the same time, I think it's important to continue to provide support for those countries that might have graduated, and because personally, looking at the list, I see that certain so-called graduate countries are very low-income countries. In other words, there may be or may have been significant domestic political will to raise resources at a certain time, but as you rightly said, there may be a lack of stability in these countries for various reasons, and over time it may well be that there might be a lack of resources emerging. And leaving these countries to fend for themselves could lead to problems. There are also some star pupil countries, as it were, who have shown good experiences. They might be deemed to be champions of Codex in terms of capacity building and progress made. They might be flagged as examples of the countries which, even if they do not have much in the way of resources, might be able to make significant progress on Codex. Therefore, I would say that we should study certain elements of the first option, but also some of the second option. Because there is a need to provide support even for those who have participated in the past, because participation may not necessarily be continued for various reasons. Bearing in mind that there is a need to provide support for countries in preparing documentation for participation in Codex, it's more than simply funding travel. In addition, despite the budgetary reductions we're trying to make, I think there might be a need to strengthen the Trust Fund personnel, staff involved, given that the work burden involved in providing additional support for countries may increase. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much for that input. Coordinator Nazwap, please.
Thank you, Chair. And I'd like to again offer congratulations for the presentation from WHO. It's perhaps one of the most expensive participation from the Trust Fund coming from the Pacific. Is always about triple the amount that would pay for a participant from Africa or Asia. And I'd like to support all the proposal that has been made in terms of option two, and also extra treatment for graduate countries. From our 11th session of last year, we to support the shift of the trust fund from objective 1 to objective 2 and 3. But for this new proposal for the extra treatment of 2 extra years and also for the graduate countries would be most welcome in our part of the world. Thank you.
Member Cici Lack, please.
Gracias, señor.
Thank you, Chairman. I, in fact, have a question relating to the management of the trust fund. My attention is drawn in 247, where we set out the expenditure involved, and it's possible that the management of the fund, if we take this as oversight and management, it seems that this accounts for some 18.5% of the income of the trust fund, and this attracted my attention. Because looking at the FAO documents relating to project funds, I see that the trust fund expenditure accounts for the highest segment of the expenditure. In other words, 13% of the FAO project funds go over to this. So I wonder why the management of the trust fund accounts for such a large tranche of the budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Member for Cici Lack. I don't see any more flags. Coordinator Euro, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Cici Euro, I would like to thank FAO WHO for an excellent presentation. Cici Euro is an opinion that LDS and SIDS should get some extra support. In our opinion, it is very important that as many Codex members as possible, especially from developing countries, should possibly actively participate in Codex work at all stages of the process. However, it should be kept in mind that not all standards, in particular as regards commodities, are equally important for all Codex members. So in this view, Codex members may consider to choose and to limit their participation to only those committees related to their national priorities. I think that youth mentoring and or twinning among countries to strengthen participation is highly recommended to apply more widely. And at the end, I would like to add that during the last Cici Euro session, 15 countries of European region were supported by CTF in their participation, and I would like to make thanks for Codex Trust Fund for supporting this participation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Coordinator for Europe. Coordinator for Asia, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Position of Cici Asia for this proposal, especially for the question number 2, we are support. Then we propose the possibility trust fund could support the developing countries in conducting research of scientific data. That's the question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Coordinator Asia. I'll now give the floor to WHO, first of all, to clarify on the funding, and then we need to summarize from this committee what the way forward should be for those key questions under Objective 1. WHO, please.
Yeah, let me start with the funding question first. There are two things. One is what we heard from the coordinator, from the member Africa, is that there is a need to strengthen the support, the managerial support to the Codex Trust Fund, that in fact we're facing sometimes problems with ensuring the best service with the current staffing we have. So in principle, that's in opposition to what I'm hearing here in terms of, you know, the question about the expenditures. The expenditure is, by the way, not 18%. I mean, my quick calculation tells me it's 15%. It's 1.5 million out of 10.1 million to start with. Then, if I understood right from the member of LAC, it's you were asking also why we have managerial cost beyond, up and above, the 13% overheads. Now, the 13% overheads is a levy that you would get on any money that comes to the organization. The program doesn't see it. The Codex Trust Fund Secretariat doesn't see it. It's actually to cover the cost of the organization in terms of managing the funds through other services, acquiring, reporting, all of these services that you don't see but that are really very, very expensive. And in principle, I mean, I remember from my time at university, we used to pay, and that was, you know, long ago, we used to pay 25%, and now I think it's up to 35-40% that you pay as a levy. So in principle, the UN is now in discussion as to whether the 13% are even sufficient to cover the cost of the management. That has nothing to do with managing the program as such. So I think it's very reasonable, and again, we're really caught between your advice of reducing the cost and the advice we're having from the distinguished member from Africa to increase our support. And I think, I mean, my observation in the period that I have been responsible for this program has been that, indeed, we have cases where we would need much more support in order to make sure that the participation is more efficient.
Thank you very much, WHO. From the submission from this floor under Objective 1, I take it that this committee does support continued support to both the LDCs and SIDs, that this committee also does support the need for the various options, which include training, capacity building and mentoring by way of sustaining participation, and that this committee does support to graduate countries. But on this issue of graduate countries, further analysis needs to be done to see who is deserving under that category. That's what I get from the discussion on that floor, on that Objective 1. But I see the flag of Coordinator for Asia. Coordinator for Asia. FAO, please.
Just to add to the discussion, the assurance that the consultative group, particularly FAO and WHO discussions, take very much into consideration the question of efficiency and also the need
to avoid duplication of the work of the CTF with the work of the parent organizations. So we are considering various options for, based on the experience of past years, how can we organize things differently, administratively and organizationally, to introduce efficiencies. So my main point is efficiencies between the CTF and the operations of the parent organizations, and just to assure you that, we are working on we recognize there have been problems, and we are working on improving efficiency.
Thank you, FAO. Vice Chair Knut, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to thank the WHO for a very comprehensive and thoughtful presentation of the problems. That was impressive, I think. I just have a very simple question. We have a discussion about priority, and that's important, and a discussion about what are we doing about these countries that fall out. But I just keep thinking whether the organization has any indication of the total funding. I mean, we have a relatively small number of countries contributing to the trust fund, and if just a few of these countries fall out in the future, the total amount of money to prioritize will be reduced significantly. Do you have any indication? I mean, if you have a 10 or 20% fall in the total sum in the future, the issue of prioritizing which countries should be supported on which basis will become even more critical. I know you might not be able to answer it, but I think it's relevant to bring into the discussion. Thank you.
Member for CCLAC, please. No? Okay. Advisor Africa.
Hey, thank you, Chair. We're just making a follow-up to what was our presentation from the member for Africa. We did also mention that the staffing at the Codex Trust Fund office needs to be considered very well, because that in your summary, it appears it might not have been taken. It would support that that is also a point we should be considered. Because like what happened was because of the staffing constraint, we didn't have the information relayed on time by the time they were evaluating that funding has been stopped and so forth. But the problem is because of that, because at that time there was only one person. So I'll appreciate if also that point was considered in addition to all the points that have already been submitted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advisor for Africa. I think that point will be noted. I see the flag of Member for North America. Please.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to make a comment that relates to training, capacity building, and contributions to the trust fund. Some countries find it extremely difficult to make fund transfers, and so what that doesn't mean that they don't participate, that they don't contribute things that are designed to assist members in participation. So as we look at the programs, the capacity building programs, et cetera, let us not forget that there may be other, that some of the countries may be doing things on their own or separate that really ought to be considered part of the overall effort. And so we don't want to lose track of those things as we look at what's being done and as we plan what needs to be done so that we're not duplicating things. Thank you.
Vice Chair Davi, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank WHO for the nice presentation and has certainly provided some food for thought. During my interaction with colleagues from different countries, particularly countries in Asia with whom I have been interacting, somehow I have observed that countries do not really know how to select a committee in which they need to go. If you talk to them about CCGP, they probably don't know what CCGP is all about, still, even today. Similarly, if you talk to them about CCFIX, they do not know what are the issues being discussed there, and so on. So if we look at countries who wish to participate, who want to progress, perhaps the starting point could be to give them a clear understanding about various committees and what issues are being discussed and how are we focusing our attention towards food safety. This will help them to look at participation in Codex meetings. They just select on an ad hoc basis without really understanding what are they going there for. So I think capacity building would assume much greater importance at this point of time if we really have to develop effective participation in Codex. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for those inputs that have definitely refined our recommendations. I would like now to ask WHO if they have some final comments on Objective 1, so that we can also have some other key questions on Objective 2 and Objective 3. WHO, please.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to respond to there were a couple of questions and two others were comments. On the budgeting issue, and it's an important question, if I just take at this point, a back of the envelope look at it, what I'm seeing is obviously as countries graduate, we have fewer countries that we're supporting, so there's a resource demand which will be less there. But if I look at the countries who will be brought back in under the options we're talking about, both graduates and for LDCs and SIDS, it won't bring us right back up, because supporting two participations to 31 countries is not the same as six participations for 30 countries. However, It does appear to allow us to keep very much the emphasis on Objective 1, which is something I heard loud and clear from all the regional coordinating committees, is yes, there can be some strategic shift, but you need to keep your emphasis on Objective 1 and the physical participation. So it seems to me that we'll be still working within a 55-60% part of our budget, which will be dedicated to Objective 1. So it's still the vast majority, even if we move to 25 or 30% for Objective 2, and then probably not more than 10% for Objective 3. But it's certainly, we certainly have the budget to be able to bring on this additional support. And it allows us to keep the emphasis on Objective 1. In terms of the Codex Trust Fund Secretariat and the efficiency gains, we are looking, as we take this strategic shift, we are looking at new ways of working. And for example, the support to training courses. If we do many more training courses, supporting training courses, which will be carried out by FAO, WHO and others during the year, the administration will no longer be done by the Codex Trust Fund Secretariat. We're looking at ways of, and there's many of them, of outsourcing that, either through the parent body or through an institution in the country who will be hosting the training course. There are many ways of doing that. So, and it also responds to the distinguished delegate from Latin America and the Caribbean. We are also thinking, how can we keep our expenditures down on management and administration? You know, I don't think we should have a big secretariat growing and growing and growing. That's not the, it's looking at different ways of working it. So always thinking, how can we keep the management and administration down? How can we increase efficiencies? How can we use our budget better? And the distinguished delegate from North America, I think that's a very good comment about how everybody fits in this whole, what I like to call the Codex training capacity building constellation. And in a way, you've said, well, you know, it's like a contribution in kind, what others are doing. And I see Codex Trust Fund is simply, where do we fit in that constellation? It's a big one. What is our, it's not everybody fitting in with what we're doing. We need to actually find our niche, our place in that wider constellation, because everybody's moving in the same sphere. And I think we'll have some interesting discussions on that next Friday during the side event. And finally, on the prioritization issue, Vice Chair Dave, that's also an interesting one. We, with the application, there are guidelines for prioritization of Codex committees at the end of it. But I think your point is well taken, and I think we need to do more on helping countries prioritize committees, understanding what's in it for their country, and maybe we could think about working with the host countries of the different committees on this, and doing better communication with countries. It's already in the capacity building efforts, the Codex training of FAO and WHO, but once again, taking that on board, how can we do more on that, do it better, possibly bring it into some of the work that's being done in countries. So thank you for the suggestion.
Can we have the questions for objectives 2 and... I think let's also have objective 3. So we have training and objective 2, and I believe we have sort of discussed that issue while we're reflecting on objective 1, but the floor is open, and let's take the two together so that we are able to gain some time, so that we are able to complete this item before our tea break. So the questions are under objective 2 on training. Are these the right areas for the trust fund supported Codex training? Maybe we need to reflect on the areas there once again, and then the issue of provision of scientific data. Member for Africa, please.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't speak at length, but having heard our discussion, I would say that the need to reinforce Objective 3 is crucial. It's absolutely obvious. I remember that at the coordinating committee meeting of Africa last year, when WHO gave us a presentation on the impact of mycotoxins on public health, we all agreed when we said this was a silent death, because actually we had realized that most of the foodstuff used locally in daily popular consumption was subject to this kind of contamination and due to all sorts of environmental situations, stocking, etc., of food. And we had even asked ourselves why we should be emphasizing foods for export. There was a study on financing by partners, for example, on coffee. Of course, that's important too, but when it comes to protecting people's health, of course, one needs necessarily to review and look carefully at what those people are consuming locally. And if not enough progress has been made there, perhaps there hasn't been enough scientific data and know-how. So I would say that this approach to support certain countries, and I commend and I thank the two parent organizations for having chosen a specific number of countries and collecting data, for example, on sorghum, well, that is great. But I would insist that most of the grains and cereals used in Africa for daily consumption needs to be worked on further. More effort has to be made. Now, of course, it's not only up to the trust fund, but it is necessary to use every resource possible, from bilateral funds, from the trust fund, domestic funds, etc., to help us work on the data to see how we could establish standards on these products. It's in the interest of the public health in our countries. Thank you.
Thank you. Member for Asia, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have rather a question to the question. That is, well, we recognize the importance of taking into consideration data from as wide areas as possible of the world before establishing any codex recommendations, especially when it comes to food safety. But I also recall there are similar activities organized by FAO and WHO. And we also think that, well, the first objective in the establishment of the trust fund is to facilitate participation of countries in codex meetings. So my question is, how much money in the trust fund will be allocated for these activities? Because, I mean, well, I kind of hesitate to say this, but the Japan, or at least the Minister of Agriculture in Japan, had to go through the same path. Before, there was no submission or provision of data, but these days, you know, well, it's our effort, but now we can provide data on contaminants in many different kinds of foods. So, you know, I can understand the importance of this activity, but certainly we do not want to see, first, duplication of work by Trust Fund and FAO-WHO. And the second, we don't want to see the decrease of the possibility of participation of, you know, developing countries in need because of this. So I'd like to get some answer to clarify this concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Member for Asia. WHO, maybe you may wish to respond.
With pleasure. Thank you, Chair. With regard to the money that will be made available for the data surveys on mycotoxins in sorghum, this was the subject of a separate contribution by the European Commission. We have a contribution from the European Commission that we use for participation, and they, for the first time, they've made a separate contribution in a different agreement, which gives €625,000 over 3 years to do the data surveys in the four countries that I mentioned earlier. So it's extra money. It has no impact on the money that's made available for participation because it's fresh funds, new funds. So the total of what we will be spending is circumscribed by that. So we're talking about $950,000 over 3 years. And that will constitute the bulk of what will be spent on Objective 3. The other proposals on Objective 3, the one where we do the seminars to increase understanding of the science and how it gets into Codex and how member states can contribute, as I said, is at the moment a no-cost item. And the proposal, which is still being considered by the parent bodies, to possibly bring qualified experts in to the expert committees under a more mentoring kind of arrangement would not be more than about $20,000 per year.
WHO would like to add something, then I recognize the flag of FAO after that.
Thank you, Chair. Just to alleviate the concerns of the distinguished member of, from Asia, apart from, you know, the figures that you've got now and the fact, you know, that it's not all out of the central fund, we have discussed with our colleagues in FAO and with the Codex Secretariat, and the two principles that we're following are the ones that you insist on. One is, do not weaken Objective 1. We know that Objective 1 is important, and that is top priority. Yet again, we need really to balance. Just participation is not enough. We need really effective participation. So that's why Objective 2 and then consequently Objective 3 need also to be strengthened. Again, no question of weakening our contribution to Objective 1. And then the second thing, and I'm sure that my colleagues from FAO will support this, we've had discussion as to how to integrate the capacity building activities of the parent organizations, how to coordinate with the additional capacity building activities that we're proposing here. So again, there is no risk of duplication. In principle, it's the same people doing the same kind of work. So there is no danger of that. So anyway, I think, I mean, we take your advice, we'll follow, and we'll make sure that it guides our work in the future. Thank you.
FAO, please.
My comment is along the lines of my preceding the commenter from WHO, just to respond to the delegate from Asia about the question of duplication. But yes, I want to assure you that FAO does have mycotoxin and mycotoxin control high up in its priorities, not just narrowly from the perspective of regulation and monitoring programs, but even more broadly with our sister units that deal with post-harvest infrastructure and supporting structures and so on along the marketing chain. So it is a complex issue. Solving it is not just a question of measuring it. And FAO has a number of programs in place to deal with this. For the last year or so, we've been collaborating very closely with WFP on the question of mycotoxins, and we're actually very actively joint fundraising to have an even larger presence, particularly in Africa, to deal more effectively with this situation. And with WHO, we are looking, with WHO and IAEA, we've had so many questions and queries, for example, over the issue of sampling and monitoring, that we are looking to see, okay, how can we improve the guidance that we've already given on this? So in several spheres of FAO's capacity development program, with WHO and with relatively newer partners like WFP, we are actively engaged.
Thank you very much, FAO. The conclusion to the key questions, and I'll take them 2 and 3, is that this committee supports the proposals as presented to us. However, it has been noted that there is further need to balance the objectives 1, 2, and 3, and the need to harmonize efforts in these areas, especially between the parent organizations and the Codex Trust Fund initiatives, and also to take into consideration other efforts by the member states in these areas. So thank you very much, WHO. Thank you very much, delegates. We shall now break for tea, and we shall come back at 11:15. Please be mindful that we have to close by 12:30. Thank you very much.